Good afternoon. This is the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for March 11th. It's about 12:41, and we are going to start. Let the record show, too, that we do have quorum to begin our meeting today. Senate File 353 is first on our agenda this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 353 is a response to some concerns that were raised this past fall over reports of a 2005 session law that required a portion of that budget be balanced with certain land sales owned by the state of Minnesota. It became more widely known that some of those land sales, a large portion of those land sales to fill this 2005 budget balance to the tune of $6 million was coming from the sale of recreational lands.
Thank you.
Particularly wildlife management areas. And then with increased investigation, we learned that it was, it is primarily recreational lands that have been on the table for sale to meet this 2005 session law. I believe it was a year ago where this mandate was delayed, but I believe June of this year, that mandate comes into effect, and $6 million worth of state of Minnesota-owned land needs to be sold in the amount of $6 million. And it seems that the burden has fallen primarily on the Department of Natural Resources, and with its holdings of a large amount of recreational land, those seem to be the parcels that have been targeted. What's wrong with that? Number one, these are recreational lands. For one thing, people have enjoy them. But number two, more importantly, there have been a lot of public-private partnerships, particularly with wildlife management areas, scientific natural areas, that have been initiated, particularly with local community support, nonprofits, and a lot of volunteer work that have gone into the purchase of a lot of WMAs. Now, I don't think that the DNR is looking at those types of parcels. I think they're trying to mitigate the impact and trying to lessen and trying to assess what are perhaps lesser used or, in their terms, not perhaps obsolete lands. But there's two points to be made there. Number one, I don't think that there are many parcels of open space, whether they're in the metro or elsewhere, that don't serve an important environmental function, whether it be for wildlife, whether a wildlife corridor, whether it be for open space, and hunting in some areas of the metro, but also for water retention and other environmental purposes. Even property values in that local neighborhood. But I think the greatest concern, I think, is that if there is a chilling effect to the tune of we work hard to create a wildlife management area, work hard with landowners, if we work hard with the local community, create public-private partnerships, a lot of which are with the federal government, Pheasants Forever or Ducks Unlimited and all sorts of conservation organizations and local community support. And for some reason, the state of Minnesota will sell those lands. I think that will have a great chilling effect on these types of initiatives. Whether that's the intent of the department or not, and I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think the department has been trying to sell large parcels, trying to keep it in smaller areas that might not be used anymore, may become obsolete. But I think there will be a tremendous chilling effect if we sell $6 million worth of state lands that are recreational. And then the last point is that on this issue of, well, we'll try and sell wildlife management areas or other parcels that are obsolete, that are surrounded by development, may not be used for hunting anymore. To my earlier point, I disagree that those lack value, particularly in the metro area. Smaller parcels have tremendous value in the metro area. In fact, we pretty much only have smaller parcels. Secondly, I think if we say that, well, we're going to sell a small parcel that you can no longer hunt on because it's surrounded by development, I think you've created a self-fulfilling prophecy. That, well, if the local community just surrounds that parcel with development, then they will have an indication that the DNR will eventually sell it to them. They can develop that too. So I disagree with the assertion that it's okay just to sell off small parcels to reach this goal as well. And that goes to the whole encroachment issue that we've talked about in the past here. So what my bill does is it does not prohibit the sale of recreational lands, of state lands. It just says that lands that fall under the definition of the outdoor recreation statute cannot be sold. So the DNR can still sell land that it owns. And the law doesn't say the DNR. I mean, there's all sorts of other agencies. DOT is another one, Department of Administration. All of these other agencies have land that they can seek out and determine that needs to be sold or is obsolete. And they can meet this $6 million goal. But the DNR to date has sold about $750,000 worth of land, much of which falls under the outdoor recreation statute definition. And I think that's enough. And I think we can find that $6 million elsewhere, and it shouldn't have to fall completely on the Department of Natural Resources. I don't think that's what was the original intent of the 2005 session law anyway. Given all these concerns, I think I've come up with a reasonable proposal to say there won't be a financial impact. You can still sell the lands, state lands, meet that $6 million goal, but just don't take it out of the outdoor recreation definition land any more than you already have. And so I'm sure the Finance Committee will want to take a look at this, but I don't think that there should be a fiscal impact on this because the goal can still be met. DNR might have some other thoughts on it, but just want to perhaps go to the testimony and we can have a greater discussion on this. But I think this is a reasonable way to approach the problem. Gary, you want to start?
Welcome, Mr. Bosick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gary Bosick, Minnesota Conservation Federation. From your agenda, we've federated since this was printed. So Minnesota Conservation Federation is my official client today. I've got one hand out, Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Sure. We'll have someone come and get that
It's, Mr. Chairman, it's just a document that was handed out at the Wetlands Summit about three Saturdays ago, held down in Bloomington. And what this is just a quick summary of the conservation lands statewide by county. So it'll give you a chance to check some of the numbers that you may know for your own county. And the only part of the Outdoor Recreation Act that's listed on this is the WMAs, but a lot of the testimony you're going to hear today, at least early on, will relate to wildlife management areas because they are very unique in how they got there and why we stand here to fight for them today. But this is just an informational piece for you that you may find useful. And Bowser has got this updated as of the end of February, so it's very current. We have, as that graph points out, Mr. Chairman, 1.145 million acres of WMAs in Minnesota. The Outdoor Recreation Act, as many of you know, in statutes 84A, Outdoor Recreation Act contains 11 different categories dearest to our hearts, or at least to conservation federations, are WMAs, but it also relates to aquatic management areas and scientific and natural, and you're going to hear a little bit about those today as well. But state forests, state parks and trails, recreational areas, and on and on. There are 11 categories, and that's a lot of distinct differential type of activities, all managed by the DNR. Mr. Chairman, we support the legislation that you have in front of you today because we feel, too, that it's a little bit overkill and a little bit overburden on the Department of Natural Resources. We were part of the discussions in 1975 and have been interested and affected by those discussions ever since. But I recall one of the first sales, was a work farm up at St. Cloud next to the reformatory. Well, they had stopped training prisoners to become farmers, which was probably a good idea, but that was surplus land, and the Department of Corrections sold that for $15 to $17 million. So that was surplus property that probably needed to be rid it from the state coffers or into the state coffers. And that money, of course, is going into general fund. So any of these sales that we're talking about in this bill are not even kept in the Department of Natural Resources for additional acquisitions or operation or maintenance. It's back to general fund. And the last time I looked, we did a constitutional amendment because we were having trouble getting our fair share from general fund. We certainly would like to see if there's going to be sale of these types of lands, that money somehow revert back or be kept in natural resources type of activities. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to go much further. I'm just going to say one thing about WMAs.
Thank you.
My past president, Gordy Meyer, passed away a couple of years ago. We did a fundraising effort for him and raised $5,000. We just presented that check to DNR within the last couple of months, and I think there's going to be a picture and story in Outdoor News this week, matched by Critical Habitat. $10,000 is going toward the Vermilion Wildlife Management Area, which is a beautiful complex in Dakota County that's got a wildlife management area next to an aquatic management area and a new regional park coming in there. You know, to Senator Parasol shaking her head. She knows very firsthand how wonderful that property is. But I would hate to have to go back to Gordy Meyer's family and say, you know, 10 years from now or 20 years and say, sorry, but we're DNR has to sell some of that land because the state needs general fund. I just think that's the wrong way to go about some of these parcels, some of these properties, because there is blood, sweat, and tears, treasures and tears both on many of these parcels, particularly WMAs. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stop and just say we support wholeheartedly the legislation you have in front of you today.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And two questions, I guess. One for you, Mr. Butzik, was you referring to the statute of 84A? Are you, in fact, not talking about 86A?
Senator, or Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator, I was just grabbing 86A off the bill, but you may be right. It may be 84A. Senate Counsel can help me there. Outdoor Recreation Act is under...
Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it was the other way. It is 86A, Mr. Botsick. You okay. Just inadvertently said 84A
okay.
when you were talking.
Excuse me. I stand corrected. It's 86A.
Yeah.
You wanted to deal with ATVs or something?
Oh. not today, Mr. Chairman.
A follow-up question, please, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Senator Ingebretson.
Just to Senator Chaudhry, you referred to the 2005 legislation. Was it not 2007? Because I think we voted on this legislation last two years ago. And it was
Senator Chaudhry.
All but one voted for
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, the original session law that required this sale was 2005. It was amended in 2007 to extend it another year, I believe.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And actually, it was a good point that Mr. Botzik made that I forgot to make. This does not prohibit the sale of these lands. It just prohibits the sale of these lands, the proceeds of which would go into the general fund. So it doesn't say that these lands can never be sold, and sometimes it is appropriate. I personally argue that it would rarely be appropriate, but sometimes it is. But that money would have to go back into a dedicated fund for purposes of more WMAs. This just says you can't sell it for the purpose of putting the proceeds into the general fund.
Mr. Ness, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. We stand in support of Senator Chaudhry's bill, 353. Just to make a couple points in addition to the comments by Mr. Botzik. At this time, it seems contradictory that we should be selling wildlife management area at a time when there seems vast public support for acquisition and long-term acquisition of new lands via, of course, the Constitution Amendment that was just passed. In saying that, I know that as I sit in some of those meetings, I know there was a considerable discussion about the balance of wildlife management area lands within the metropolitan area. And if we choose to sell these off, where are our projects going to be? We need to keep these places in place so that we do have places to balance the acquisition and balance the restoration and balance the quality of access to metropolitan areas as well. And in saying that, there are other conservation benefits that these areas provide. They provide fish and wildlife habit, open space, land conservation, wetlands, water quality, flood storage, non-game habitat, as well as game habitat, and possibly environmental education. So there's all kinds of other benefits that these areas provide within within these locales that, again, have been surrounded by housing or surrounded by development. And they still provide other benefits as well. And what will become of these lands after they're sold? Will they have permanent conservation easements placed on them? What will be their future uses? We don't know. So we have, you know, strong discerning questions about what's going to happen to these lands that have been paid for by either sportsman surcharges or stamps or federal funds or been donated. So we have very, very concerns about what will happen to these lands after they've been sold. And finally, do these parcels actually exist? Just selling the wildlife management areas for the sake of selling wildlife management areas, again, seems very unsettling to us. Again, they were purchased, again, with license surcharge. And just a little brief history in that. That sportsman had requested a surcharge be placed upon our license to acquire lands. It's been happening since the 1950s. And we've acquired a great amount of lands with license surcharges. Again, a fee placed upon ourselves to enhance these lands. At the minimum, you know, we should, you know, really delay any of these sales until we can figure out if these parcels do exist. As Senator Chaudhry says, there are maybe other parcels that are more appropriate to sell versus the parcels in the Outdoor Recreation Act. And so I'll conclude my statements there, and we thank Senator Chaudhry for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Mr. Ness. Questions for the witness? Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, are there currently plans to sell metro area wildlife areas, or is this just a potential problem that we're talking about? And if you could answer
Mr. Chairman,
that.
Senator Ness. And the answer is yes. The bill that Senator Saad referred to says that the DNR must sell lands to make up the balance of this general fund deficit. Since most of their lands are wildlife management areas, they are now looking at lands within And if you look at your little chart there, in Hennepin County, for example, there's a 264-acre parcel that is now basically surrounded by housing. In the Prior Lake area, there's another area that is also surrounded by development. And I've talked with the manager in that area who, again, says, you know, according to this new law or this 2005-2007 law, I may have to put that land up for sale because it's one of the ones that will be looked at to make this law happen. So I would say, yes, it's a very distinct possibility these lands could be sold. They are being looked at.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Ness. Harvey Nelson, Steve Thorne. Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and as indicated, my name is Harvey Nelson, and as a bit of background, I spent 42 years in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and had a fair amount of experience in the National Wildlife Refuge System, and the Waterfowl Production Area Program when that was started. So I'm familiar with the difficulty of trying to acquire and manage these lands. And today we're going to talk more about specifically what the Department of Natural Resources is dealing with, and particularly waterfowl management areas. But okay. But anyway, today I'm representing the Minnesota Waterfowl Association, and we are concerned about the potential disposition of outdoor recreational lands under the management of Minnesota DNR and strongly support the provisions of Senate File 353. And most of you know, this includes a broad spectrum of recreational system lands, including state forests, parks, trails, wildlife management areas, aquatic management areas, other recreational areas, and designated scientific and natural areas and other state lands under their jurisdiction that do provide public use and public access. Now, we recognize that there may be special situations where it might be practical to consider sale or exchange of existing lands, but we urge that, and particularly we're concerned about the wildlife management areas and their future, but we urge that more rigid criteria and procedures be developed to address these situations and to address them on a case-by-case basis when they do develop. And we also do not support the policy of selling an annual predetermined quota of acreage or dollar value, as has been the case to date. So from our point of view, we're concerned about where this may lead in the future, and particularly with the increasing populations, human populations, and the pressures on these lands. So let me close by saying let's be sure before we take these actions that these lands can serve fish, wildlife, and people first.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Are there questions? Senator Sharon.
Someone may have spoken to this already, so I apologize ahead of time if I had, but I just need to know can these lands be sold without legislative approval? Can the department sell the land, be instructed to sell the land and go ahead and do that without ever coming back and engaging the legislature?
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, under current law, yes.
Other questions? Mr. Thorne?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Steve Thorne. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. But for 12 years during all of Governor Perpich's terms and also Governor Quies, I was a Deputy Commissioner of Natural Resources. So I was involved in acquiring a fair amount of land for the state of Minnesota. And I'd like to take a step back. I'm interested in wildlife management area lands, but I'm interested in public lands generally. Once Minnesota was granted about 16.5 million acres during the late 18th century and early 19th century, by 1950 we had about 5 million of those left, mostly in the northern part of the state for obvious reasons. They were cut over pine lands and other lands that could not be sold for agriculture. Since 1950, a period of almost 60 years now, we have clawed back about 500,000 acres of valuable natural resource lands. And it's been at immense effort for a lot of money from surcharges on the license, from bonding money, federal funds like Pittman Robinson, Dingell Johnson, lottery money, LCCMR money. Millions have been spent in acquiring lands for the outdoor recreation system. And it's not just wildlife management areas. There are about 1,100,000 acres in the state wildlife management areas. But there are about 3 million acres in the state forests, all of which are available for multiple use recreation, except the odd area that's designated as scientific and natural area or preserved for some reason or other. But the bulk of that land is available for multiple use recreation, including hunting. The state park system is one of the biggest in the country, and it's grown substantially from maybe 100,000 acres in 1950 to about 227,000 acres today. And those have been purposeful, careful additions that, in the case of the state park system, you folks have approved by boundary changes. And in fact, in many cases, there have been specific legislative authorizations for the lands that have been acquired. And now, to say that after the effort and the money that have gone into purchasing lands for the state outdoor recreation system, we're going to turn around and sell an arbitrary amount, which is not specifically tied to management decisions made by resource managers in DNR, but just simply because somebody decided that we need to sell X amount of dollars to make fill a short-term hole in the budget. It does not make sense. These are lands that were acquired for long-term conservation benefits, and they should only be sold or exchanged. And exchange, by the way, is another way that we can actively manage these lands. Is if indeed there's a piece of land, and I agree with Senator Chaudhry that just because it may be surrounded by other lands and may not even be open for hunting at the present time, it does not mean that it doesn't provide ecological services, water quality, flood control, open space, you name it. There are many others. But to say that we're going to sell based on an arbitrary determination just flies in the face of reason as far as I can see. So it seems to me that the bill makes sense. I mean, I would say we shouldn't sell any, but I'm not making the decision. But at least the lands that we have managed to acquire at great expense and great effort over the last 59 years, plus the lands that, lucky enough, we were managed to save from the 16.5 million acres this federal government granted us early on, ought not to be sold unless there's a resource management purpose in making the sale, not some predetermined fiscal reason to try to make up a hole in the budget. So we support this bill. We think it makes sense, and I hope you will support it.
Thank you, Mr. Thorne. Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of information. You bring along a wealth of information along with you today. Should this bill be enacted, is the universities and Minsky properties involved in this? Can that be sold, do you know? And another question would be, of those lands that the university and Minsky do own now, if they're treated differently, why? And how much of that is actually environmental properties?
Mr. Well, Thorne. There's about all of those lands, well, not the university lands, but most of the rest of the lands you mentioned are in this permanent school. They're school trust fund lands.
Right.
And that's about 1,200,000 acres of permanent school fund lands in Minnesota. By law, any sales or receipts of those lands goes in to the permanent school fund for the support of education in Minnesota. It does not go into the general fund directly. DNR generally doesn't sell those lands. They're generally subject to exchange, subject to the Land Exchange Board approval. But those lands are managed primarily for return to the permanent school fund, timber sales primarily, and also mineral leases. Occasionally they're exchanged.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, maybe Mr. Knopf can read the current law, what agencies are mandated to, or within this, captured within this sales mandate.
Mr. Knopf?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, the law says the Commissioner of Administration shall coordinate with the head of each department or agency. So the University of Minnesota would not be included because it's not an agency of the state. Minsky could be because they are an agency of the state. So Minsky lands could be included in the in the law from 2005, amended in 2007, that mandates this sale. But it wouldn't, it certainly wouldn't affect school trust lands because they're protected by the Constitution, because the money can't go into the general fund. It has to go into the school trust. So those lands wouldn't be included, but it would be every other agency of state government that owns land could be part of this coordination with the Commissioner of Administration.
Other questions? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, sorry, I was a bit late here, but this is prohibiting the sale. It's connected to that requirement that DNR sell off a certain dollar value of land by the end of this year, is it, or by July?
By the end of this fiscal year, I believe.
By the end of this fiscal year.
Yes. And Mr. Chair, it's not just DNR, it's all agencies. So, but DNR is one of the agencies, and they're the largest land managers. So
yeah. So, Mr. Chair, it pretty much falls to them. And I understand they're not close to that amount. And now this bill would prohibit certain lands from being sold for that purpose. What is there? Has anybody thought about... since that has been driving some interesting behavior, one of which is a bill that I have before your lands committee on Friday, is there some reason that you're continuing with that level of land sale, that dollar amount? Is that filling some hole that's already been dug, and it we have to backfill into that? And
Senator,
or otherwise,
Olson.
If nobody wants to have any of the land sold, then why do we load the DNR and other agencies with that mandate?
Mr. Knopf, you want to?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, probably because of this last sentence in here. It says that the total of all money deposited in the general fund, the proceeds from the sale under the section is anticipated to be to the $6,440,000. If it's less than that, the governor must allocate the amount of the difference as reductions to the general fund operating expenditures for other executive agencies for the biennium. So basically, the agencies will get a further reduction in their budget for this current fiscal year. Remember, they've already been...
Up to that number.
Up to that number, up to whatever's left over.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, has any accounting been presented as to what has been sold to date and how much of that obligation has been met?
Senator Chaudhry?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, we did have a brief hearing on this in the Environment Finance Committee. To date, DNR has sold about $750,000 worth of portion of that $6.4 million. Now, this bill does not prohibit the rest of that $5.7 million worth of land sales to occur. It just says that the lands under this definition, for the reasons we stated at the beginning and all the testimony, should not be part of that.
So, Mr. Chairman, I could see quite a few people wanting to have similar bills that would protect various lands, so then essentially it makes it impossible to, if they're the major landholder, it makes it impossible for them to attain that goal. So why would we, I'm just trying to reconcile the two directions. One, sell land. Then, you know, this is one example of don't sell this land. So should we be looking at this in a different perspective?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson,
I don't
see a lot of other people coming forward saying the same thing, because this is really the only type of land that I can think of that has that multi-purpose recreational use. The rest of the land that could come from MnDOT or other DNR land holdings or MnSKU would be administrative in nature. And they can certainly review those land holdings and sell them for the purpose of meeting that $5.7 million goal. But I think we have a compelling reason, not just because people are using the land, but we don't want to have a chilling effect on the future purposes of this type of land, knowing that the government might end up selling them just to fill a general fund budget.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Senator Anderson, did you want to?
Well, Mr.
Question?
Chair, Senator Vickerman had to show me his lucky penny first. But we're going to need it. I guess we don't have a dollar amount of what this would cost yet, right? I mean, we don't know how much if we – I support this bill, and I'd like to pass it. But it will create a hole in the state general fund, not in our – just in our budget, but in this – it's being accounted for in the entire state general fund budget, as I understand it. So do we know what this would cost?
Senator Chaudhry?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I don't know why it would cost any money because it still preserves the goal that needs to be met for the $5.7 million remaining. It's not prohibiting the land sales to meet that 2005 budget. It just says that we don't want those sales to come out of the lands that meet this definition.
Senator, follow up.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess we need to know, are there enough other lands that could meet that $6 million goal? And I don't know the answer to that.
Chaudhry.
But I sort of doubt it. But maybe if we're lucky, we need that penny.
Senator Chaudhry, do we
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, we can certainly do that, and I presume that the Finance Committee will want to review this bill, too.
Yeah.
But I think there are these are not the only pieces of property that the state of Minnesota owns, and there are lots of property that can be sold. And it's not just by the DNR either. We have to recognize that the focus of the 2005 session law was not on the DNR. It was on all state agencies. And state agencies, particularly MnDOT and others, hold lots of pieces of land. And the burden should not fall solely on the DNR, for one, and number two, on this type of parcel.
Senator Olson and then Senator Saxog.
Mr. Chairman, is there something that was imminent that might cause some of these – there were some plans to sell some of this land that is the reason that we need this protection right now for this particular category?
Mr. Chair, Chaudhry. Senator Olson, yes, $750,000 worth of land have already been sold. Most of those parcels are probably okay and reasonable, but that's only $750,000 worth. Once we start getting into trying to meet the goal of $5.7 million, you have a whole list of land that could be on the block, and that's of great concern.
So,
Mr.
Chairman, you talk about MnDOT, but MnDOT has often acquired those lands in connection with the highway project, and I would presume that money that comes back would end up in the highway trust fund, not in the general fund, because I'm not sure that money that acquires land for the roads has come out of the general fund.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that's for the administration to review which ones can be legitimately sold and what can't.
So, Mr. Chairman, this bill
says that this type of land should not be.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, you wouldn't have, if you'd been able to, you would not have wanted the land that they have sold already, DNR has sold already, to have been sold, given your intent here. Is that correct?
Senator Olson, I would have preferred not. No.
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Chaudhry, maybe the DNR could help us with this, too. You talked about $750,000 has already been sold of DNR properties, $750 worth?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, that's my recollection of the amount that we heard in the Environment Finance Committee a month or so ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of curious to how much the DNR maybe thinks that they've got left in potential sales to raise this $5.6 million. And if it's again, if we were talking about WMAs embedded in cities or anything or whatever.
Senator Saxog, he's not on the list, but I think we'll have Bob Meyer up at the end, and we'll ask him some of those questions.
That'd be fine. Thank you.
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to get my head around the value of this land, maybe just to throw it out here. We've been given the amount of acres that are owned now and in each county. Can you tell me of the 750,000 sold, how much an acre are we talking about here? Average of how many acres would have to be sold? If
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, my recollection is of the current amount that has been sold, it varied. But I think DNR will come up here and give you a better a more specific answer.
Senator Chaudhary, I think I'll ask Mr. Nelson and Mr. Thorne. You're welcome to step away from the table. And I think, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that's one for Bob Meyer later. And Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhary, is there targets by the administration for how much each department is supposed to sell? So that do we know that this is the amount that they have to do, or is the way it's being presented here is that the DNR is going to have to make up the whole rest of the 5.7?
Senator Chaudhary, I think that's a Bob Meyer question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, it's my understanding that I don't believe that there has been an allocation amongst the agencies. It's my understanding that the primary burden has fallen on the DNR, but they can answer that question better.
Mr. Curry, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Curry with Audubon, Minnesota, and we would like to thank Senator Chaudhary for bringing this bill forward, a very important piece of legislation. It's my first time before this committee, so I want to take a small liberty let you know that Audubon, Minnesota is 12 chapters throughout the state, running from the Agassiz Audubon in the northwest to the Zumbro Valley in the southeast. We're 17,000 members. We're the oldest wildlife organization in America, with chapters forming in the 1880s and becoming a national association in 1905. With respect to Senate File 353, I first want to observe that the people of Minnesota are deeply committed to conservation, and it's great to see legislation that matches that public sentiment. Do Minnesotans support public land and wildlife? A look at their pocketbooks say yes. And I have this is a statistic-laden testimony. The important statistic is Senate File 353, and we want you to support that. Millions of Minnesotans buy hunting and fishing licenses every year that pay for habitat. Hundreds of thousands more buy conservation stamps, such as a trout stamp or a pheasant stamp or waterfowl stamp, to pay for even more targeted select habitat. More than 100,000 buy conservation license plates for critical habitat. Thousands more pay extra taxes every April 15th with the chickadee checkoff, the non-game wildlife habitat checkoff. Close to 80% voted for the right to hunt and fish. The same margins voted to establish and then reestablish the Environmental Trust Fund. And finally, the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment was a self-imposed tax for the benefit of land and water habitat, and it was supported by more Minnesotans than any politician in election history. Why do Minnesotans impose financial burdens upon themselves for land and wildlife habitat? Because Minnesotans are anxious. Their definition of what it means to be a Minnesotan is threatened. Minnesota is the fastest growing state in the Midwest. We're growing twice as fast as Wisconsin, four times as fast as Michigan, and many times more than our Iowa and South Dakota regional states. Minnesota has added 1 million people to the state since 1970, and the demographer says we will add 1.2 million more by the year 2030. With that development, we're consuming nearly double the amount of land per person than in previous generations. Bigger homes, bigger lots, more second homes. From 1982 to 1992, we used to lose about 23,400 acres per year. From 92 to 97, we lost 46,400 acres per year. The projections are that by 2030, we will lose an additional 1 million acres, more than 1 million acres, of natural areas and farmland, Senator Dill, to development. That equals the size of four average Minnesota counties. It equals, for example, the size of Ramsey, Dakota, Hennepin, and Anoka counties that we are losing every year to development. Surprisingly, this is not a metro area phenomenon. Growth is occurring wherever there's proximity to natural resources like forests, prairies, wetlands, and wildlife. There are 20 non-metro counties, seven-county area, 20 non-metro counties that are going to grow by more than 30% by the year 2030. And all the land in those areas is turning from natural lands to low-density development. What does this mean for our natural resources? Many are on the brink. We've lost 99% of our prairies since settlement. The big woods that once ran from St. Cloud to Mankato was once 1.9 million acres, and now it's 10,000 acres. That is home to our beloved red-headed woodpecker, whose population is down 87%. We've lost 58% of our wetlands, and 42% remain. Thousands of our lakes and rivers are impaired. By now, you know it's about 40% of our lakes and rivers. And all of these trends continue. I will point out some very big recent sales. In the last 4 or 5 years, Boise Cascade sold 2.2 million acres of forest land. Minnesota Power sold 26,000 acres. U.S. Steel sold 800,000 acres. Currently, Blandon is considering 188,000 acres for sale, all to development. And that last Blandon one, I will note that the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council just passed a recommendation to you all to take care of that in the form of a forest legacy conservation easement. So cross your fingers there. The impacts on wildlife are very acute. We have 292 species at risk in this state. That's about one quarter of all of our species. And it includes 60 bird species that are on Audubon's action list. And we have 200, or about 10% of our native plant communities that are endangered, threatened, or of special concern. A final note is a program that you might not hear about otherwise, which is the DNR's SNA program. It is included in the outdoor recreation statute. The SNA program looks at those wildlife species that are threatened, those rare plant communities that are threatened. And the handout that I gave you relates to that. The SNA program works with these ecological subsections. Their goal is that no rare feature is lost from any region of the state. The long-term goal is to take each of those subsections and identify five areas that have significant natural plant communities and identify three areas per subsection that have rare geological or species included in them, and to protect those. They are living museum of natural sciences, and they're a benefit to our outdoor recreation system. It's about 123,000 acres. There's 130 or 140 locations, and 88% of them are open to public hunting. A good portion of what funds the SNA program are those voluntary license plates that people pay an extra $30 for, and the chickadee checkoff that folks pay an extra whatever they amount on their taxes to. And so those dollars, I don't think the folks voluntarily contributed them to be a part of a general fund budget solution. They contributed them for wildlife habitat. And I'll take questions.
Thank you, Mr. Curry. Questions? Mr. Bizet.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Jim Bizet. I sit on the board of directors of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. I'm here today in support of Senate File 353, and to state that MOHA and its members' position is one of no net loss in wildlife management areas. We feel that the citizens of Minnesota spoke with a very loud voice last November about their concern for wildlife habitat. And at this particular juncture, a reduction in wildlife management areas, I believe, would absolutely send the wrong kind of message back to the voters. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, gentlemen, and I'll ask Bob Meyer to come to the table. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, while he's coming up, just to make a point, and I'm not sure if it's been said, I wasn't here at the very beginning, but it seems to me that it's likely that selling off WMAs at this point would be supplanting. It would. I mean, we'd run into violating the Constitution because we're going to be recommending purchase of a lot of new WMAs with the constitutional funds. And so we'll be cutting with one hand and buying new ones with the other, and that's clearly prohibited by our new constitutional amendment.
Senator Sharon?
Senator Chaudhry, the sale that's already occurred, $750,000, did you say, is that money for the general fund being redirected to the general fund, do you know?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, yes.
Or Senator Chaudhry. Okay. Assistant Commissioner Meyer, welcome to the committee. You've probably heard, I don't know if you were taking notes or not, but I'll let you introduce yourself, and then we need to know approximately what the cost per acre was on the sales that have been made so far. Our agency's directed on how much land to sell individually, and are there other lands in the queue right now that will help us get to $6 million?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. thank you for letting me speak on this important bill. First of all, let me say we do appreciate the concern and support that all the constituents in the legislature has about selling these types of lands. I only wish that I had that support back in 2005 when I was testifying against this provision within the State Department's bills, telling people that we were going to have to sell these types of lands, and now here we are. The balance right now is about $4.1 million that are left to sell. Of that, Department of Administration has several sites, but they aren't getting any takers on that right now. There's a site in Anoka, another administrative site. There is no direction for agencies that are out there to sell land. I'm having a handout printed up for the committee that we handed out in the Finance Division outlining what each agency has sold to date, acres of ownership by each agency, and the totals and the balance that we're at. So when that comes, we can talk about that a little bit. But the state of Minnesota as a whole owns 5,566,000 acres of land, roughly. The department owns and administers 5.5 million acres of those acres. So there's 65,000 acres that remain within other agencies. Right before committee, I had a discussion with the budget director from management, Minnesota Management and Budget Services, and he told me, I asked him this specific question, if this bill passes, how will the DNR be impacted on unallotments? And he said, of the remaining balance, the DNR will be unallotted the majority, if not all, of that $4 million. So we are concerned that by not meeting the land sale requirements the legislature has imposed, it will be another $4 million of unallotted general fund revenue from the department in fiscal year 2009, which we've already unallotted $5.2 million. Those dollars will come from divisions across the whole department, including ecological resources, fish and wildlife, enforcement, forestry, parks and trails. That type of dollars, we will have to unturn a lot of rocks to come up with those types of dollars in this fiscal year.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, can you just refresh us a little bit more? Because I'm not sure how many of us were even aware of what happened in 2005, but you said it was through state departments? Senator Anderson is telling me she never saw it in her division. And why would it not have had some purview when the DNR has the vast majority of the lands that would in public ownership? It obviously, if you were going to sell off that much land with that much value, it would have to take a great nick into DNR managed public lands.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, members, and perhaps with a little help from Mr. Knopf, we can provide the history here. In 2003, the legislature began down the road of sale of state lands and anticipated savings and earmarking dollars to be replaced in the general fund from the selling of land. Actually, in the 2003 state government finance bill, they had a provision that was in Chapter 1, Section 31, that had a land sale requirement anticipating savings of $5.5 million. That was from some specific sites that they're looking at. The Department of Administration's Bureau of Criminal Apprehension building on University Avenue was one of those sites that were sold. And they were able to save several million dollars. They met that requirement so well, in fact, that they came back in 2005 and came up with the same idea. And that's where the DNR became concerned, because looking at coming up with those types of savings, we were specifically saying that we would have to probably sell parts of state forests and things like that because of the concerns of purchasing lands with dedicated funds off of bonding, game and fish dollars, things of those nature, stamp dollars, federal funds that we have no control over. If a parcel of land has been purchased or has been invested with federal dollars from the Land and Water Conservation Funding, LACON dollars we call them, the restrictions on selling that land are very prohibitive. So we would have to transfer that amount of land into a different category, things of that nature. So it becomes problematic at best. There have been about $2 million of sales that have occurred since then. Actually, in 2007, the legislature came back and extended the expiration date to pay for that spending from 2007 to 2009 of June 30th, which we are fastly approaching. And it is our hope that the legislature will see in the governor's supplemental budget some language that would extend that date from 2009 to 2011 because of the declining land values that we're seeing right now. we need to meet this goal, but does it make sense for us to do so while prices are declining, or should we wait until prices start to come back up again? So that's a discussion we'll have to have for another day. But that's the brief history of it. It was always traveled in the big state government finance bill. I believe it might have been in, I think it was House File 1812, when we had an omnibus supplemental budget bill several years ago. Mr. Knopf can provide more detail if I've missed a couple pieces there.
Mr. Knopf, anything else we should know about the history?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the last change, as noted in the bill, was in 2007, Chapter 140. That was where it was extended to 2009. And it would affect the general fund for the current fiscal year if it were to be changed or lengthened out. But I think there might be a little room now based on the last forecast.
Mr. Meyer, this bill really, though, also ties your hands a little bit, and you would potentially face dealing with up to $5 million less to work with.
Mr. Chair, members, the number that is being tracked right now is approximately 4.1. I can get the committee that exact number to date. The bill before you would prohibit us from selling any lands of the Outdoor Rec Act 86A.05, wildlife management areas, scientific natural areas, parks, trails, forested lands. I passed out a list that does have the timeline and then the list of parcels that we're pursuing for our spring sale here, because we have to be moving forward in order to meet this goal. Many of these parcels, if you look at the top is the timeline that we're following right now, Mr. Chair. February, we're right in March, we'll be holding these wildlife management area vacation hearings in the counties where these lands are located. We're only looking at lands for this land sale that we have acquired through custodial control transfer from other departments or agencies. The wildlife management areas on the bottom of the back page, Hastings WMA, Hog Island, and the Jaeger WMA, came from custodial control from hospitals or the Department of Transportation. Specifically, the Hastings Wildlife Management Area is one that we're working with the city of Hastings on. They do support this transfer. It's 80 acres
Mr.
that we acquired
Meyer,
from the hospital.
I don't think everybody got the second handout.
You know what? Nobody handed it out. I'm sorry. It's right here. You got that. I apologize.
We'll
that goes around. But we're looking at disposing of lands. A lot of them are forestry-acquired parcels right now for this spring sale that are on the list because they're isolated 40s surrounded by private ownership that have no public access to them.
Mr. Meyer, do you make those private sales then? Do you, those landowners get a first crack at it, or how do you do that?
Mr. Chair, they would go up to public auction, I believe, and then anybody has a fair shot at it. Those types of parcels are identified that they do not have public access, though.
And then, Mr. Meyer, in your opening comments, you said you had some administration areas that nobody was biting on them. I think you said you had some lands for sale that nobody was interested in. Typically, what do those look like?
Mr. Chair, members, those are Department of Administration sites I was speaking of.
Okay.
I believe one is associated with the Anoka County Treatment Facility, but we can get a list of those specific parcels for you as well.
Senator Ingebretson.
Oh, that was probably the – thank you, Mr. Chair. That's probably the question I have here is how much of the lands under 86A no longer serve their intended purposes? Do you have any idea?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, members, the ones that we've been spending a lot of time on identifying parcels to be put on this list, and it's our feeling that most of these lands either provide no public access, they provide very limited value to the citizens of the state of Minnesota for their intended purposes. So that's why we have them up for disposal right now. We're actively engaged, and I believe the only way we can be successful in acquiring the highest quality conservation lands in this state is to manage our lands that we own as an asset, looking at what we should sell in order to buy the best that we can. Right now, after this land sale requirement is met, any lands that we would sell, and this bill wouldn't prohibit us from doing that, if we sold a WMA, the dollars would go to the land asset management account to purchase more WMAs. Where we have a small parcel, we want large parcels, 40s, 160s, 640-acre tracts of land that provide large amount of access, large amount of habitat, water quality benefits. We need the big parcels of land. So we've spent a lot of time at the actual area level. So our area managers have identified these parcels. They were vetted through the regions, through our regional management teams, through the senior management team at the department, and through the commissioner's office to obtain this level of scrutiny on this list. The first two on the list that I believe everybody should have now are DNR acquired lands, Keystone 1 and 2, Wilkinson, Savannah, Lammers Township, all the way down to, it says, County 47. Those are forestry-administered lands that are isolated. We no longer have access to. They no longer serve. We can't get to the site to harvest timber on most of these sites because they're landlocked. We could. It would be very problematic. They wouldn't be up for timber auctions in most cases. But these are all units of the Outdoor Recreation Act that would be prohibited from sale. From County 47 down to Hillwig Creek, those are trust fund parcels that we're looking to sell to benefit the school trust fiduciary responsibilities. In our work with the Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee and people who want to make sure we're all managing the school trust lands appropriately, these are lands we've identified that should be sold for the benefit of the school kids. St. Croix Boys Camp is some land that we acquired through custodial control from it's not the McKnight Foundation. It was from another foundation that no longer is serving its purposes. So there was language, actually a reverter clause in statute that allowed the DNR to acquire that land once they were, that we purchased it back from them. The Schmidt WMA is one that's fully developed neighborhoods all the way around it. We're looking at divesting that to the city of Champlin, if possible, to be continued as open space. Hastings WMA is an 80-acre parcel we acquired in a hospital transfer, and we're working with the city of Hastings to develop that parcel. It's surrounded by development on all sides. The Hog Island WMA is 11.6 acres we acquired from Department of Transportation. And the Gordy Yeager WMA in Rochester is actually within the city limits. It's actually a cultivated farm field associated with one of our building sites that the city of Rochester is actively interested in acquiring. So this bill would prohibit the city of Rochester from acquiring that site, which is, it's right down the road from their waste energy facility in an industrial park. We have an office building associated with that. But it makes sense that those units should be sold in order so we can meet this goal. The bill as it's drafted will just restrict us to basically selling our office sites for this requirement. And last year, actually, we passed a bill that allowed us to capture those facility site costs into a facilities management account so the department can redevelop or acquire new building sites to replace those displaced workers.
Mr. Meyer, all of these have been appraised?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, this is our spring sale list that we're actively pursuing at this time.
Other questions? Yes. Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, did I say, would all of these be prohibited if this bill is passed? Is that what you said?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, members, the trust fund parcels would not be, but I need to explain also, this list contains all of the parcels we're looking for sale to sell this spring. You'll see on the bottom where it says proposed land sale parcel list, trust land management, enhancing natural resources, and State Department of Finance bill. We're taking a three-prong approach on our land sales right now. One is to meet the fiduciary responsibility on school trust lands. The other one is to enhance our natural resource management base, selling these small parcels to buy bigger parcels. And the third leg of this stool is to meet the goals of the State Department Finance bill.
So Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
Mr. Chair, then which ones on here go to the latter goal?
This one passed.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, members, it's the commissioner's goal to evaluate what sells after the land sales process goes through. And look at the ones that do. The trust fund parcels certainly won't. It would be our goal, hopefully, if we could sell all forested land and pay off the debt, if you want to call it that, with those lands. We would certainly try to do that. We're trying to manage the debt, the $4.1 million, and also the concerns of the stakeholders and citizens of the state of Minnesota as best as we can. So it's kind of too early to answer that question. We need to make sure the $4 million goal is reached, but also put as much money into the land acquisition account as possible.
Senator Shaw,
Mr. Chair, the list that you have here is the list that DNR is proposing to sell in general, not just to meet the 2005 session goal. So, and by the way, my bill doesn't prohibit the sale of any of these lands.
As of the date of enactment?
No, because my bill only says that the that sales of land under the outdoor recreation account, the proceeds of which cannot go to the general fund. That's all I'm saying in this bill. So the DNR can sell land.
But it can't go to the general fund.
Can't go to the general fund. And as Mr. Meyer testified, a lot of this isn't proposed to be going to the general fund anyway by the department. So and then there's also a little bit of a red herring there, because the if indeed the administration has indicated that it's going to unallot this remaining $4 million if it can't get it from land sales, if that is indeed the case, my bill would not impact that either, because my bill does not prohibit that $4 million mark from being reached. It just says it can't come out of these particular types of land.
Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Chaudhry is right on point with those comments. The concern is the language, the legislation that's still on the books does require the department to unallot, and actually in the finance division we will hear from the Department of Finance that their intentions would be to unallot most, if not all, of that $4 million from the department, which will have severe impacts in this fiscal year.
DNR.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I mean, there are a couple of ways we can explore that potential. Number one, Mr. Meyer testified that earlier that because of land prices being so depressed, perhaps a delay until 2011 for all of the land sales might be warranted. And then secondly, we could take out the portion of the law that requires the unallotment, so that it just becomes kind of an ongoing thing that eventually the state of Minnesota will reach that $4 million goal. And then extend it to 2011, that will give enough time to find other areas outside of the outdoor rec statute to find those land sales. So I think we can find a very reasonable solution that doesn't have a budget impact.
Senator Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe Senate Counsel can help. What falls under that outdoor recreation system?
Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, there's a number of, it's basically all in that section. There are different subdivisions, state parks, state recreation areas, state trails, state scientific and natural areas, state wilderness areas, state forests, state wildlife management areas, state water access sites, state wild and scenic and recreational rivers, state historic sites, state rest areas, aquatic management areas. That's pretty much the end of the list.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, and you know, we always have a list of land sales or transfers that, you know, are little odd pieces, you know, where cities or counties or you know, would want to either put them into the into their tax base or into a recreation area. Would this prohibit them from the DNR from selling those pieces?
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, no. It just says that the proceeds of the sale cannot go into the general fund. It doesn't prohibit them from selling any land, or certainly not exchanging it.
Follow up, or are you okay with that, Senator?
It's a different question, but and this just relates to state lands in general. Those of us who represent the northern tier of counties in northern Minnesota, if you look at that conservation land summary, that statewide summary, and you look at the counties that go across the northern part of the state, you'll notice that that whole tier of counties has the largest burden or whatever you want to call it, chunk of number of acres, and it has over the years been a an issue of either lack of tax base or lack of ability to be reimbursed, and the system that's in place in most WMAs across the state is a system of what they call pilt payments, and these vary from one area to another. But one thing that should be worked out is if we're going to put more land into public ownership, no matter where it is in the state, that we ought to recognize that there is a local cost to those areas too. And if you look at, let's say, Beltrami County or Kitson County or Lake of the Woods County, they carry a huge burden of public ownership. In some of the counties that I represent, it runs into the 80-85%. And Senator Saxhog and Senator Bach, they have counties the same way. And so those publicly owned lands need to reflect some payment back to the local governments to maintain the roads, to maintain services that are needed in the communities. And I know when I was first elected, the system was to kind of beg through the DNR, the PILT payments that would go back to these local units of government. Of course, it was the last thing they'd ever ask for. So it would be about 11:55 or 11:59 the night we were adjourned before we'd actually get something. And so I think that as the Lessard Commission or that group starts developing greater public ownership, we need to recognize that there's some local burdens that counties and cities and communities bear.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Stump. Just I agree with you that we have to think about those consequences, and we've been in the Lessard Council, the legislators on the council, I think, have been raising that question because we understand it's a tale that probably will come out of our budget, our state budgets, rather than out of that legacy funding. And so we need to think about how much of a tail we're creating for state government in the PILT system. And I know my finance division has heard me say this many times, but I'm not sure if you've heard it, Senator Stump. I do want to also point out is that some of our districts don't get any PILT payments, even though perhaps I have a city that I represent in my district that's 66% tax-exempt land. That's more than St. Louis County. You know how much? No, that's Falcon Heights. It's got the State Fair and the University of Minnesota, and it's got – so it most of its land is not available for tax base, and guess how much PILT it gets? Not zero. So just something to think about. We're going to have to figure out how we're going to handle this. I mean, I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, these days with cuts to local government aid, those communities around the state that do get PILT, it's another type of local government aid that they're counting on in their budgets, I'm presuming. And so we really are going to have to think about what's the long-term prognosis for being able to pay those and increase those as we add more public land. I mean, I'm not sure how we're going to do that, honestly. So we need to really consider the impact, though. I totally agree.
Senator Saxhog.
And one of the solutions, of course, are easements, mm-hmm. where the taxes continue to be paid.
Mm-hmm. Senator Chaudhry, would you like to move the bill?
Just three final points. Number one, Senator Stump, this senator, you'll find this senator leading the charge for a better mechanism for PILT payments, to increase PILT payments. And then secondly, even in the northern areas, you'll find instances where the local communities, whether it be governmental or non, have worked very hard to create a piece of recreational land. WMA, forest parcel, whatever, what have you. And to the point I made at the onset, the most important part of this bill is to prevent the chilling effect on those local efforts and local partnerships to create public recreation land that creates the concern that the state of Minnesota will just sell that land and put it into the general fund. That's the most important part of this bill, to prevent that chilling effect. And that those activities occur in northern Minnesota and all over the state. That's what this bill is trying to prevent. And then thirdly, I think between this committee and the Finance Committee, maybe I can explore with members and the department an amendment on those two concepts, extending the sales out to 2011. I think there's a rational argument given the value of lands these days, and then the unallotment issue that might be a little just harsh. But I'll explore that between now and finance, and maybe come up with an amendment to put on at that time.
Thank you, Senator. Other questions?
Otherwise, I'll move that Senate file 353 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
That's the motion before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It does prevail. Senator Saxog? Members, we're looking at Senate file 805.
I didn't say that.
Senator Saxog, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed on the agenda that it just said Saxog. Is there some assumption there that it's going to be on forestry?
We were going to leave it to your discretion, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today we're going to be presenting Senate File 805, and I want to welcome you to this year's Great Minnesota Forest Discussion. I have an A2 amendment, first of all, that I'd like to put the bill in order. A2 amendment. Move the A2 amendment.
All right. Thank you. Senator Saxog moves the A2 amendment. This is this bill's first stop, Senator. Is that right?
It is, Mr. Chair.
It's an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 805, as amended, is designed to begin discussions on we, meaning the DNR, can better manage timber sales on state lands. And with me today is Dr. Alan Eck from the University of Minnesota, to my right, and Norm Moody, Land Commissioner, Cass County, on my left. Bob Tomlinson from the DNR Division of Forestry, and Wayne Brandt from Minnesota Forest Industries and Timber Producers will be up here a little bit later. We want to go over two pilot projects in this bill, and they basically deal with two questions. How can we better or best set a value on the timber sales that we do on our millions of acres of land? And second of all, in our quest to more efficiently manage our forest lands, one of those things being consolidation of lands, is there a piece there for leasing state lands to people who could more easily manage these forest lands? So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Eck.
Dr. Eck, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Alan Eck, head of the Department of Forest Resources with the University of Minnesota. And I would start with the issue around the appraisal of timber. Generally, there's two ways to develop that sale. One is through appraisals, where field crews would look at a property and assess the timber values, and that would lead to sale documents and ultimately the disposal to the typically the highest bidder. That is in contrast with selling as scaled, as we call it, with in this state, it's what we would call the consumer scale, where that initial appraisal is actually rather light, leading to a sale document and ultimately to purchase, and then the quantity ultimately determined as sold will be done at the consumer scale and reported back to the DNR for charging the logger or the purchaser of that timber. So there are two ways, sold as appraised and sold as scaled. The issues between these two, and I would describe them as perhaps six issues. There is the issue of revenues to the state and the state's associated responsibility with respect to revenues. Second, there is the speed or the cost of the administration of these sales. There are many, many such sales each year. There is the issue of encouraging sound forestry practices and utilization of that sale once it is purchased. Fourth, there is the issue of confidence in, yes, I got what I bought, so to speak, and both the state and the purchaser are happy with that determination. Increasingly, there are issues of chain of custody in certification efforts to show where wood came from and where it might be going. And then occasionally, in any kind of transaction business, there is the question of how do you handle disputes and whether sold as appraised or sold as scaled might be a better way or a more efficient way to handle those disputes. Currently, most of the state's timber sales are sold as on consumer scale, where the wood is delivered to one of, I think, 50 or so purchasers or mills in Minnesota, even a couple in Wisconsin, and they then report back to the state of Minnesota the quantity that they scale, typically with scaling by weight, sometimes by actual dimensional measurements of quantities on trucks or logs on the ground. And that arrangement has been in place for quite a while, and we have a ticket system involved where loggers, when they leave a site, leave a ticket with a number on it in a lockbox. The driver carries one with them, which really becomes the logger copy, and then the consumer scale has the third part of that ticket, and that's the basis for reporting back to the state and the ultimate matching up of the tickets and the invoicing. The questions then are, what's the best way to do this? What's the most effective? What's the fastest? And there are thoughts that sold as appraised will lead to faster administration, simpler administration, perhaps improved utilization on sites, especially as we move to issues about biomass removal or residual biomass removal. And then there is the question that what do the purchasers really like in terms of confidence? It's not uncommon for an appraisal upon purchase and delivery at a mill to be found either slightly high or slightly short of what the purchaser thought they were purchasing, and that can be a problem with sold as appraised. In cases, many cases, loggers prefer a method that might cost them more, but in effect they have a better idea through the consumer scale at the mill that in fact this is the right quantity to charge me for. With that as a preface, I'd say support your attention to this amendment, and we'll have some discussion, I believe, about what's a good way to go at this in terms of developing some study of this and evaluation and reporting back to this body.
Thank you, Dr. Eck.
And Mr. Moody, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators. My name is Norm Moody. I'm the Land Commissioner of Cass County. I administer about 254,000 acres of forest land for the county. We're somewhat unique in three primary respects regarding timber sales. Number one, we guarantee the acreage to be offered every year, and we do meet those goals. We don't use an allowable cut. We have a guaranteed offering. Number two, we have timber auctions every month. So if you aren't successful 1 month, 30 days, there'll be another auction. The other thing that we are quite unique in is that we sell all our timber area estimate lump sum and not bifurcated sales. These are clean area estimate lump sum. There's no gamesmanship. Little personal. Yes, that is on appraisal, but it's also lump sum. That is, you don't have non-bid species mixed in there. It's just clean. What you've done is, let's say we have a 27-acre sale. There's a line painted around it. We go in and do a very intensive appraisal. We say what is in there. So many cords of aspen, so many cords of birch, so many cords of maple, so many thousand board feet of red pine. We say that's what's there. We put an appraised value on there, and that's the minimum bid. It's clean. People bid. Bid's over. They get it for the bid. So actually, they're buying it by the acre. It's a very... the appraisal is consistent. It cannot possibly be accurate. Fill you in on that a little bit later, why it can't be accurate. Little basic history here on myself. 29 years ago, I started selling timber, and all the timber I sold was, that is, hand-scaled or stick-scaled with a scaling stick. About a year and a half later, we converted slowly to the consumer scale system, and there was a lot of contention there when we did that. Ooh, it's a new system. About 16 and a half years ago, I moved to Cass County, got my first taste of area estimate sales. There's been an evolution of the area estimate sale because we did start with, when I got there, they were doing the bifurcated sales where part of it was area estimate, part of it wasn't. It was a mishmash. And now we are completely area estimate lump sum. When the sale is made, the deal is done, the dollars are set, nothing else happens. It's clean. Some of the key issues with the area estimate lump sum sales, like I said, they are consistent. They are not accurate because they can't be accurate. Two loggers logging exactly the same sale will come up with different volumes. They will come up with different volumes because different rates of utilization. They're using different equipment, and they have different markets. So when you sell the wood this way, you can't guarantee that it's accurate. We do guarantee that it's consistent. And by the way, we sell all our wood. So we don't have any problem selling the wood that way. The operators understand what they're buying on this system. There isn't an overrun, and there is not an underrun on the sale when it's area estimate lump sum. They bought on estimate. There is no guarantees. But as long as you're consistent, it doesn't seem to be a problem. The other issue there is no shortcuts to cruising. You need dedicated professional staff. They must do the work. The acreage that we sell is very precise. The number of plots taken is not based upon any mathematical model. Use that, I think, for credit default swaps or something. We don't use a model when we determine our cruising standards. They will do at least two plots per acre. If they feel that there's reasons to take more, they can take more. They can't take less. If you walk into one of our sales, what you will see is you'll see numbers painted on a certain number of trees. What those are for the operators, if they're going to bid on our sales, a bid tells us they've seen it. Whether they have or not, the bid tells us they have. We don't care. But if they go out there, they'll see a number on a tree with yellow paint. It'll say 64 or 58 or 57 or whatever. If he looks and asks us for the crew sheet, he'll see that, oh, yeah, that's one of the trees we measured. Then that operator gets to determine if he agrees with us that that's the amount of merchantable timber in there. That's how he decides he's going to bid based on our crews. And you must stick with your cruising standards. You can't vary once you start selling wood this way. If We have had other counties that have been interested. They ask us how to go about this, and we tell them, go about it slowly. Don't just jump into it, because it takes time for the operators to get used to it. But once they get used to it, we find that they do like it. And I'll stop there. Thank you, Senators. I appreciate your
questions. Senator Saxog, do we want to bring Mr. Tomlinson and Mr. Brandt in?
Mr. Chairman, I think we should. I think we'll deal with the first issue, appraised versus scaling, and then we'll talk about the leases.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we ought to.
Bob Tomlinson, Wayne Brandt, please. Bob Tomlinson.
Again, Mr. Chair and members, when we're talking about this whole idea of the different ways of valuing timber, what we're proposing here is a pilot, and we aren't proposing changing all the DNR's way of doing things to.
So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, did we adopt the delete all yet, or is that just?
Yes, we did.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry that Senator Fredrickson isn't here, but you just gave up getting rid of 13 suches.
You counted them already.
I did. If I found them all.
Oh, my God.
So noted, Senator Olson.
That'll be an omnibus amendment then. Well, Mr. Chairman, the bill was essentially making the change to appraisal from scalers, and what you're backing off here on the delete all amendment is kind of doing a pilot and doing some comparison between the methods before taking that leap.
Senator Olson, we limited number of acres. We had a limited number of acres versus a pilot. But
okay.
I'm going to let Mr. Tomlinson talk about that.
Okay.
Mr. Tomlinson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Bob Tomlinson. I'm the assistant director of the DNR Division of Forestry. Just to help put this in some context for folks, and we talked a little bit about this in the Senate Finance Committee when I believe Senator Bach and Senator Saxon first asked the question of whether or not this might be a kind of a cost-saving measure for us, and we've been discussing it quite a bit with Senator Saxog and a little bit less with Senator Bach after that. But basically, right now, the DNR has under permit 2,683 permits that consist of about 2.6 million cords of wood. That's 2.6 million cords that's already sold two loggers out there. A value of that is $65.2 million. And that's about 550 permit holders that are holding that wood for sale. The scaling of the cut product via the consumer scale approach, and Dr. Eck laid out the differences between selling it as appraised volume versus selling it on a consumer approach, goes through about 2013 because of the fact that most of those sales have anywhere between 2 to 5 years worth of time before the sales have to be operated on and the wood moved on. 94% currently of that volume has already been sold via the consumer scale approach, and 6% has been sold on the sold as appraised volume approach, which is essentially Mr. Moody apprised you of, the approach that they've taken. So what we've talked about then is, could there be some increased value, some cost savings that could come to the state by having us not spend as much time on the consumer aspect of it? And we've been working with Senator Saxog to come up with some language that we felt was pretty good for meets his intent and language that we can go with. We remind the committee we don't need legislation to do this. We can do this in policy. But if you want to put it in legislation, that's your prerogative. We're okay with that. And we agree that the date of January 15th to report back is a good one, because that will allow us then to get a couple of years' worth of sales under our belt, so to speak, and do the evaluation necessary to come back and report back to you on the value, if you will, relative to the cost savings to the department, but also what it's going to take relative to the revenues coming in, and whether or not they might change or not to the state as well. So we're looking forward to working with Senator Saxog the university and others on doing this evaluation as we kind of move forward with this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Tomlinson. Are there questions, or else we'll have Mr. Brandt weigh in? Mr. Brandt, go ahead.
Thank you. For the record, Wayne Brandt. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Timber Producers Association. Our members are loggers, truckers, small sawmills from the Iowa border to the Canadian border and all points in between. We're the largest and oldest logging association here in the state. There's no perfect system for accounting for the sale of timber and for selling timber. There's no perfect system between sold as appraised and consumer scaled versus oral auction or sealed bid. So there are pros and cons to each of the options that are out there. There are, in our view, a couple of very important factors in the sale of wood off of public lands. The first, in our view, is that whatever system is used needs to be as strong on assuring the public that we are paying for every piece of wood material that we take off of the public's land as it can be. The last thing that we want is any system that that doesn't provide that assurance to the public, because we are dependent on the public lands for our industry and want to be able to assure them at each point that they've been appropriately paid. The system, any system needs to be transparent, got to be pretty easy to understand, and has to at some level be documentable and verifiable. On our side of the equation, we're not interested for paying for wood that's not there. We got to know what wood is there and know what we're getting and then pay for it. Some of the pros and cons between sold as appraised and consumer scaled. With the sold as appraised system, it clearly promotes and encourages merchandising, sending the highest value products to those markets as versus going strictly for volume production. It also increases additional utilization, and when we talk about utilization, we're talking about and also merchandising in that whole area. You know, taking the saw logs to the sawmill, taking the pulpwood to the pulp mill or the OSB plant, taking the biomass products to the energy markets, not leaving material on the ground that the foresters and the managers want removed. And leaving the sale on the land in the condition that the public sector foresters want it left in. We think that sold as appraised is generally easier on administration. You don't have to deal with all the scale tickets and such for sold as appraised sales. Sold as appraised is not perfect, though. We don't want to be paying for wood that doesn't exist. Norm Moody talked a lot about their cruising standards. You need to put a lot more time and money into the process up front to have an accurate cruise. Plus or minus 20% doesn't work on sold as appraised. You got to be much closer than that and have fewer errors. Another problem with sold as appraised can be with the condition of some of our forest land, older types of stands, is that some components of the stands that are there when the cruise is done may not be there two and a half years later when it's harvested, particularly some of the softwood components, balsam and such in the understory. So, you know, there are cons to the sold as appraised system also. The biggest one right now for us with the current economy, with housing starts at 20% of what they were 3 years ago and many of our mills shut down, is that with the stress that's out there, I mean, we can't afford to be charged for wood that's not on a sale at this point in time. Change is sometimes easier when you have a few extra dollars in your wallet. On the consumer scaling side, obviously what some of the pros are the documentation that's there. You know, it shows what wood came off of what sale, what mill it went to, what the quantity was, provides that assurance to the public. We only pay for what we cut and remove. You don't have to worry about mortality within the stand because you're not paying for the wood if it wasn't there when it was harvested. Rot and defect are also tend to be a little easier to deal with in the consumer scaling system. On the con side on consumer scaling, I mean, it can be costly and can be cumbersome and expensive. You got a lot of individual pieces of paper for us to deal with, for the logger to deal with, for the mill and for the state, and to work through. And it can at times discourage that merchandising and utilization that I talked about. Again, there's no perfect system. We recently surveyed our members of the Timber Producers Association. We found that two-thirds of our members prefer the consumer scaling system. They like the assurances that it provides, all the reasons that I laid out. But on a separate question that we asked in that survey, 31% said they would like to see all sales sold consumer scale. 21% said they'd like to see all sales sold on appraised volume. 46% said sell a mix. And so we kind of come down at selling a mix. We think that both systems are appropriate. We wouldn't want to see everybody 100% one way or the other, and the mix is the good thing to do. We appreciate Senator Saxhog working with us in the department on the delete all. Again, we think that cruising is the biggest issue. The better the cruise, the more likely you are to be supportive of the sold on appraised system and its benefits. We would not support significant short-term increases in SOAV, but we don't have a problem with the DNR going through a process of increasing some of those so that we can have a better understanding on a more empirical basis of the costs and benefits. We look forward to continuing to work with Senator Saxhog, this committee, and others in the DNR on this issue. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Senator Olson, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Mr.
Brandt.
Brandt, what's SOAV?
Sold on appraised volume.
Oh, appraised. Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Norm calls them lump sum. I call them SOAV. You know, we all got our little lingo.
And we all know what cruising timber is, right?
Yeah.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, in either of these cases, regardless of how it's sold, are you generally clear-cutting an area?
It depends on what the foresters prescribe. You know, we do less clear-cutting than we did 20 years ago. There's virtually no prescriptions in this state other than some in jack pine and some where there are insect and disease issue where you go and you see no trees. The Forest Resource Council guidelines are followed for leave trees and leave islands and such and other species. So, you know, we follow the forester's prescriptions.
So, Mr. Chairman, those guidelines are there regardless of which, whether you go with the appraised value or the scaling, because I could see if you were just buying a lot of timber and you had appraised value, you'd probably be tempted to take more off, whether it's even young stuff or whatever, than you would if you're scaling.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the prescription's usually very well laid out on the sale documents, and you'd be in violation of the contract or trespassing and subject to civil and criminal penalties. So that prescription is what dictates the manner in which the sale is appraised and paid for is a separate issue from what you need to leave and what the prescriptions are.
So, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Tomlinson, how do you use both methods today, and how do you decide when you're going to use one and when you're going to use the other? Or did you answer that and I wasn't paying attention?
Mr. Tomlinson?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, they mentioned at a previous hearing that most all of the wood that we sell sold as appraised volume now is down in the southeastern part of the state, and it's mostly all hardwoods, large like oak and walnut and that sort of a thing, where we want to be really exact with it. We go out and we appraise every tree on the stump and at how much board feet is in each tree, and we tally it all up, and we sell it that way. Virtually everything that's sold, most part, south of the Twin Cities is sold that way, and some of the northern hardwoods that you'll find up in Aiken County and elsewhere might be sold that way as well, and that's sold as appraised volume process. Where individually each tree is estimated and tallied up and totaled up, and that becomes a seal. The other thing with the aspen in northern Minnesota, almost all of that is sold via the consumer scale approach. And so basically your question is, how do we decide? It's just based on the type of timber that we're selling right now that makes that determination. It's not to say that we couldn't sell aspen on a sold as appraised volume. Maybe we will, and then again, maybe we won't. I think that's part of the analysis that we need to kind of get into with this, with the university and stuff, and discussing what other types of timber types might lend themselves well to selling as appraised volume, other than just the really better hardwoods, which is what we've typically been doing.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, then Senator Saxon, it isn't that, you know, obviously you're using some flexibility back and forth between these methods now and are making those judgments. You're trying to get at some better basis for making the judgment in terms of the return, the investment return?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes. The state of Minnesota generally does consumer scaling, and most of the private timber owners, you know, let's say the Blandins or the Forest Capital Partners, I think would, Mr. Brandt would agree, are pretty much into using sold as appraised. The federal government, they're mainly sold as appraised.
Correct.
So there's kind of a mix. And yes, we'd like to we don't doubt that the DNR does the best job on consumer scaling that they possibly can, but we're just wondering if there might be some possibilities here that we might become more efficient, and as you see, we don't have a lot. We're going to kind of do this within the Department of Forestry, so we don't think it's going to cost us a lot of money. So we think it's a worthwhile thing to do, but putting it in the form of a bill makes it a little kind of codifies the you know, the reporting times and that type of thing, and we think now it's a good thing.
Mr. Brandt.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, just to follow up, I think also there's some sense out there that, you know, we've been using for, I don't know, 30 years this multi-part paper ticket system, and technology's changed a lot, and, you know, maybe there's a better solution that's out there, and so let's take a look at them.
Senator Saxon, we got two more bills, so how are you doing on ready to move this thing?
And the last thing I was going to say, though, for Senator Olson's benefit, Mr. Chair, was all of Mr. Brandt's loggers, you know, they operate under best practices, which the state of Minnesota has adopted, and they also have a huge logging education program. So we feel that Minnesota loggers do a wonderful job of managing the timber. So. Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do here is, if there's no other questions on this particular part, part two is probably even a little more simple, and Mr. Tomlinson is probably going to review it quickly, and that's the idea of leasing parts of DNR forest lands to possible managers that have a better opportunity. And so, go ahead.
Briefly, Mr. Tomlinson.
Mr. Chair, members, again, the other good idea that came out in that previous hearing where we talked about this was whether or not it might make some sense. Keep in mind, we're managing about 2.5 million acres of timberland in the state. That's land that's capable of growing a commercial timber crop out there, so pretty good forest land. And it takes a fair amount of time. And again, Senator Saxon thought, well, are there opportunities to have somebody else managing that land to some degree, some pieces of that would take some of that burden off of the DNR and thus help us save time but still have the outcomes that we're looking for. So we've been working with Senator Saxon again and have numerous discussions and things around this, and we feel that, you know, we're for a pilot approach again to kind of take a look at this, and we would need to kind of go at it carefully. We want to make sure that the taxpayers and the fiduciary responsibilities that we're responsible for are still held in highest regard, and we're looking out for that, and we want to make sure that any harvesting that occurs is done in a sustainable way and according to the guidelines that Mr. Brandt alluded to earlier there and things. So, so basically this second part of this amendment deals with an additional pilot project which would allow the Division of Forestry, the DNR, to enter into an agreement with some private sector, and it doesn't have to be a forest products industry. It might likely be a forest products industry, but it could be a county land department, or it could be a private citizen, that anybody that wanted to kind of bid on this, I suppose. And
at this point, Mr. Chair, you heard Mr. Meyer talk about selling a piece of land that was embedded in another piece of land. I can't remember if it was county or private. And that's why you'd sell it, because we don't have any way that we can get to it. So if you leased it to that person and they were going to manage it, that'd be another way of taking care of that.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Mr. Tomlinson.
Well, and so I'll just conclude by saying that, you know, if you think about all the work that we need to do in forest management, it probably starts with a real good inventory of what's out there and a strategic plan that includes the public's involvement in what the long-term outcomes, or what we refer to as desired future conditions, ought to be for the landscape and that sort of a thing. And it ends with monitoring and evaluating and accounting for the timber that's coming off and those sorts of things, adjusting our course of action, those things. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in between it, which is basically the management and the implementation, doing the yearly timber sales, doing the road work, doing the reforestation, and those sorts of things like that, that we could see potentially having some other party involved with that aspect of it. But keeping the state involved on the front end, back end relative to it mostly. And I'm just putting that fairly simply, I hope, trying to make it clear where we're looking at going with this.
And Senator Saxog, I see that the two have separate reports, so we'll kind of see them differently.
Correct, Mr.
Right?
Chair. So if there's no other questions, Mr. Chair, I would like this like to move that Senate File 805 is amended to be recommended to pass and sent to Finance.
Senator Saxog has moved Senate File 805 is amended to be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. We have Senator Saxog or Senator Chaudhry. Senator Saxog, are you prepared with Senate File 1094?
Yeah.
Let's go right to that then.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
No, it's right.
The numbers are transposed. And the names are reversed.
Didn't you
from one
reversed?
Sheet to the other.
They did a chief author change.
The bills to the agenda, they're reversed.
Senator Saxog, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1094 is a Bowser proposal. Will make modifications to local match requirements for grant applications. With me today is John Jasky, Executive Director of Bowser. He's going to go over briefly the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is an agency bill, as Senator Saxog noted. It's a very simple change. It's based on some audits that both the legislative auditor and we have done on the county grant programs. And a provision back created back in the 1980s for one of the components of the block grants that counties get to manage the state's natural resource and water protection programs included a requirement that they establish a separate levy to get a portion of that state grant. And many of them, they all did that, but subsequent to that, we discovered that some counties have established other funds. In this case, they have to use a cash match. Other grants allow for in-kind match, but this cash match, some counties are interested in using other revenue streams to fund that state match requirement. The example that we came across in this sample audit was in Itasca County, where they've got a revenue established from management of their county lands that is directly related to water quality projects, and so they wanted to use that source for that cash match for the state grant. And certainly it seems very reasonable, and we think that counties would utilize this flexibility very well, and it wouldn't make any change in the end in terms of how the projects and programs get done, but the counties would have a little bit more flexibility in their budgeting. So,
Mr. Chairman,
that's my summary.
Thank you,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, anything that has a chance of coming off from the property tax, I'm for. No matter where in the state it is.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, this would do that. It's not a big number, but it's a
That's
number.
That's right. It's a number.
Other questions?
Can be counted.
If not, Senator Saxhog, we'll lay this to be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Chaudhry, did you want to do your 988?
So it's now the bills have the reverse title. Did they switch?
Yes. Okay, they were switched on the floor.
Okay.
Senate file 988.
Senator Saxhog and Mr. Jashke.
Again, this is another agency bill. This one deals with the state cost share program that works through the soil and water conservation districts to get projects on the landscape with the landowners directly. I'll just walk through these changes. They're fairly straightforward. There's one more significant policy proposal at the very end. On line 1.12 through 1.15, what this does is simply remove the requirement that our agency approve the comprehensive and annual work plans that each of the organizations submit. We do this in effect anyhow because before we provide the funding, we make sure those plans are in place. But rather than do a two-step process, which is to first get the plans in, then approve them, then do another step, which would be to approve the grants, we simply do that through one process, which is to review the proposals and provide the grant funds based on that as one singular process.
Mr. Jaske, do you check, though, to make sure they have followed the plan?
Mr. Chairman, what we do is the plan is reviewed, and we make the decision to give the money to the local soil and water conservation district based on the viability of their plan, but we do it as a singular step, so it's a yes or no, and we make some adjustments if needed before the grants are given. We also do an evaluation of the year previous to make sure that what they've said they were going to do to get the grant has been accomplished, and
Thank
they report
you.
That through our e-link system. I'll continue on then, Mr. Chairman and members, on line 1.19. This is simply to reflect that many water management issues are both water quality and quantity based. The volumes and rates of water movement often are a direct impact to water quality. We want to make sure that we can also address those kinds of problems before they become water quality issues. So if you've got an excessive flow in a stream that's affecting a stream bank, before the stream becomes impaired to the point of noticing it, we want to be able to deal with that water quantity problem, which may be causing that stream bank instability in the first place. Getting on page 2.18 and 2.9, the same point is being made there that water quantity, rate and volume control issues are very much connected to water quality issues potentially. On to page 2.25, or line 2.25 and 2.26. What we're proposing here is that the board has the option to adopt rules rather than a mandate to adopt rules, but that we shall also use policymaking to establish the criteria for these grants and the contracts that go with those. And that's important because these funds are used many, many cases, almost always, to leverage and match federal funding, and the conditions on those change, not a great deal, but they change from appropriation to appropriation. As you know, that rulemaking is not that responsive to some of those federal funding adjustments, and so we use the board and its policymaking authority to establish the criteria for those contracts and the grants that go with that. And then on to line 2.33, again, back to that point about water quantity and quality being connected. On line 3.4, what this says is that, we use those local governments to address these concerns on these lands, these private lands. And here it talks about high priority erosion problems, but we also have other water quality problems that aren't necessarily tied to erosion. You can think of things like stormwater in an urban area where you don't have erosion because it's on an impervious surface, but we still got water quality things that we need to address. And you can also think of a more rural setting where you may have a feedlot operation where you don't have erosion happening, but you have nutrients that are being moved from the feedlot into the water stream. So we want to make sure we can address a variety of problems on those landscapes. And the programs already basically are set up to do that and do that in many cases. And then on line 3.5, Windbreaks are one of the practices that are utilized to address, erosion in some cases, but also we've used windbreaks in more urban areas to establish snow protection and also for energy conservation, shading and things like that. We've got, in fact, some windbreaks that have been established for the sole purpose, along road right-of-way to minimize the amount of snow that has to be removed from those areas to make them safer for particularly in the rural areas for travel in the wintertime. And then the last piece in here is on line 3.7 through 3.10, and this is language that we currently have in appropriations that we've received. This Minnesota Statute 84.02 is this requirement that has to do with the source and the location and the diversity of the native seeds that need to be used for establishing the practices on these various landscapes. And that legislation was passed, I think, in 2007 and with good intentions, but we've been able to convince folks that we needed some flexibility from that in certain cases. And we were given that authority in appropriation language for this program as well as other programs. And we're proposing here that that continue on without being tied to specific appropriations. That'll be a policy that carries forward with this program going forward. So that is a policy shift. And we've successfully implemented it with this flexibility this last couple of years, and we will continue to do that same approach going forward. We do not give people carte blanche to just do anything they want. We have to document that those seeds aren't available or aren't practically available and appropriate for that landscape, and then they can choose another alternative, which we've established. So this would give us the flexibility we currently have going forward.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, do any of these changes have any impact on the use of some of the federal clean water funds that might be in the stimulus package? Does this set you up for a framework for some of those kind of grants?
Mr. Jaschke.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, yes, we aren't clear exactly what those are going to be, but this we do use this program very much to line up with federal funding, and this would give us some additional flexibility in that area. Yes, it would.
Okay.
Follow up? Okay. Other questions?
We'll lay this
Senator
over
Shadrick.
Again for possible inclusion.
988 has been laid on over for possible inclusion. Anything else, Senator Chaudhry, for the committee?
War Road is leading Hutchinson 1-0.
Okay.
You're psychic. Oh, you're actually getting some
stuff.
Help. Anything else from members? Thanks for your time today. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Timing. Good job.
Thank you.
Oh, beautiful job.
I didn't think we were going to get
it. You did a bang up. I mean, you did two bills in 10 minutes. The other two took 2 hours.
Poor Senator Saxon. He probably wanted a little more time on his pilot project.
I ran out.